Hello and welcome to PHP Alive and Kicking, and we are live. Yep, you heard me right. We are live this evening. Anything could go wrong, and it probably will. We're brought to you by PHP Architect and made better by our partners at PHP Score. More about them later. This podcast explores the latest development in PHP and what's it like to earn a living in PHP today. I'm one of your hosts, Mike Page, better known as Mike Page Dev. And I'm a developer at PHP Architect. My co-host is a longtime contributor to our magazine and now a team member, Chris Miller. Hello, Chris.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Good. As I said, we are live, so please join us over in Discord where you can join in the chat, ask questions, and we'll try and answer as many as possible. There's a discord.phparch.com. We also have a magazine, and for our lovely listeners, we do have a discount to the magazine. The code is up there. Oh, it's got no, that's not the code. I told you something was gonna go wrong. Alive 3, I believe it is.
There you go.
There we go. There is our discount for the magazine. We also have a conference, PHP Tech. Call for papers are still open. So if you are itching to share some knowledge, please put them through. That'd be great. We also have our swag store, which hopefully, there we go. Store at phparch.com, where you can get some branded t-shirts, mugs, some hats. There's all sorts of things over there. So let's get on with today's show. We've got a special guest with us today.
So today we have Gina Banyard, PHP core developer, and basically a lot of other things. You speak at conferences. You're here, there, and everywhere. So hello, Gina. Thank you for joining us.
Hi there. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I do quite a bit of stuff in recent times. I've been speaking at a few conferences. Apparently, showing up on podcasts now is a new thing in the checkbox list. So happy to be here.
So are we now your first podcast?
I got invited once, but then that episode got canned because I think it was on a company sponsorship and then they folded or it's kind of complicated, but no, officially first one.
Awesome. So not only first live, but also first podcast for the guest as well. That's pretty cool. So, Gina, anybody that has been watching this knows that we ask the same question to start with, and you have no idea what we're about to ask. How did you get into PHP?
I just got into PHP because I wanted to make a website for my Lego city when I was 12. That's literally like how I got into PHP. In France, there's like this. Well, I mean, you now know it. It's now known as Open Classrooms. But back in the day, it was called Le Site du Zéro, which means the website for noobs, basically, which has this very good PHP tutorial. I think if you ask 70% of devs, PHP devs in France, if they learned it from before 2010, they would probably give you that resource as to from where they've learned PHP. That's how I got in, started, then stopped and started again. But Yeah,
so building a website because of Lego and you choose PHP, which, let's be honest, is a lot like Lego. Makes it very easy.
Yeah, it's very easy incremental progress to do. It's just like, oh, you build one thing and then you build another thing. And then you don't need to learn all of this stuff before. Just require everything in the files and no architecture.
So just require vendor and we're done. It's
well, I think when I started, Composer barely existed. I don't, like, it must have been, or it was only there for a few years. I remember still Symphony 1 barely came out, and people were trying to figure out how to actually write Symphony 1 code. And my understanding is then they completely rewrote Symphony anyway for Symphony 2. So, I think even frameworks were trying to figure out how frameworks are done at that period in time. I remember Magic quotes being a thing I needed to think about, which.
Yes, I remember those times well. Why was that ever a thing? So I guess this kind of leads us on to where you are now. You've gone from writing a PHP website to working at PHP Core. How did you get there? How did that happen? Why?
This is actually a bit of a depressing story. So for various reasons that happened in my personal life, I needed to redo my first year of university. And during that year, I was basically bored because it turns out being alone with none of your friends being able to play anything is quite boring. So I wanted to do something. I remember there was like the French translation documentation project for PHP. So I initially started contributing to that. And because it was quite out of date, I went through many, many, many changes and many doc pages. And then, oh, this is not very clear in English. Then went to clarify it in English and asked a bunch of questions. And I realized, oh, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense in this language. Like, why does this even exist in the first place? And so then I just tried hacking on the engine. And little by little, I figured it out. I don't recommend learning C by hacking on PHP. That's probably not the easiest way to learn the C programming language. But apparently, when you have a full year of nothing really to do, that's just what I did. And then from then, it's just, yeah, it's been incremental progress. It's been continuing. And so now I'm with the foundation. So when the foundation got created, I was basically in my last year of university. So it was kind of a bit of a transition after university. I started working part-time for the foundation, and that was kind of fine enough. And I did a few different things, and then it worked my way up to being full-time now with the foundation.
So you learned C by making stuff for PHP.
Yeah, a lot of seg faults, a lot of printf debugging, a lot of trying to figure out stuff, tweezing around and reading a bunch of other stuff. I mean, hacking on PHP is sometimes easy because there's like all of these macros which make it like, oh, there's a lot of abstractions and we have a for each loop, it, like even in the C code. But then when something doesn't go well, you're just pulling at strings all the time because the macros, well, hide all of the abstraction as well. So it's a double-edged sword in some sense.
Yeah, so learning the C language is hard enough on its own, but learning the C language to run another language, that is impressive. Did you ever master memory allocation? Because I never did.
No, I mean, sometimes, like the thing is normally I run everything on the debug build with like the address sanitizer. So that normally tells me when I'm doing something wrong. Like it catches quite a few bugs. I mean, the other thing which I did to like learn about the C and the programming thing in general and the code base is there used to be basically no compiler flags, like compiler warnings enabled on the code base. So I just basically enabled one, tried to see what needed to be done and tried to understand the code. And like, I just did it that way, which is interesting, but you can only do it once. So I did it. So
yeah, I mean, that's a good way of learning. So I guess this sort of leads us on to the PHP Foundation. Its main job, as I understand it, is to allow people to work on PHP Core full-time and funded through donations from varying different sources, companies, individuals. But I guess that is still an open source aspect. So people can still help with the PHP Foundation, can still contribute to Core. How would somebody start doing that?
I think there are very different ways. I think also like PHP is quite a big project. So there's Core with like language changes and tests, but there's a lot of other stuff. Like there's documentation, which 8.5 got released, well, it's in release candidate 1. The documentation still needs to be written for that. So many people can do doc writing with our XML format with DocBook. If you want questions, I'm happy to answer them because I've I've written a lot of documentation and I'm writing a tool to make my life easier. There's also all of the websites. I think sometimes you have this thing where everybody is like, oh, the website needs a redesign. It is also open source. The website is open source. You can go and like propose changes and make changes to the website. If you speak a language other than English, there's also translations which can participate. But like for core itself, I think there are three tiers of things that one can do. Is writing tests for to add coverage, because some extensions have 18% coverage, which is not amazing. So if anybody knows Postgres and the Postgres extension and wants to write tests for that, please be my guest, because again, it has basically no coverage. Or even just making some of the tests parallel, because some of the tests, especially the database tests, are like sequential. So that takes quite a lot of CI time, actually, because they all hit the same database with the same table name. So obviously you can't run this in parallel. Then there's actually writing C code. And I think for that also there's a different level. There's like extensions, either extensions on Peckle or Py now, which are usually easier to get into because it's you're not dealing with the engine itself. You're dealing with either a library like curl or ICU for like the Intel extension and stuff like that, which is easier to add incremental changes or refactorings and improve error handling or various things like that. And then it gets into the engine itself, where if you want to add like language features, that is a whole different ballpark, which is different from functions. If you just want to add a string functions or an array functions, that goes into the extension category. Language features are more like, I guess like the recent one would be the pipe operator, like a new attribute. Attributes are relatively easy most of the time, I want to say. You just need to convince and find a good use case and get a good idea of what an attribute should be. Some features are easier than others. If they're only at compile time, like the pipe operator, that's also easier than when you need to like tackle the virtual machine. So that's the whole thing. And then if you're actually very good, which I'm not yet, is like the whole opcache and the JIT compiler and all of that, which I don't really understand. And I'm always asking at least two other people when I need to make changes to it, being like, how does this actually work? Because the JIT especially is its own DSL now. So on top of assembly, which I don't understand at all. So that's always interesting. But yeah, there's quite a few different ways of contributing from very novice, I want to say, to very like experienced. And you can do, I mean, especially at the foundation, we do all a bit of everything, depending on the time and what we fancy, really.
It's wide and reaching then what you can get involved with, which is, it's cool to hear that people can get involved. And I think that's one thing that carries through the whole of the PHP community. As far as I'm aware, there isn't a single open source thing out there that's going to say no to a PR. They might say no to the end result of the PR, but they're not going to say no to you putting one in.
Yeah. I think it's also is like the key thing as well was like language changes is that they need to go through the RFC process. So there's no really a point of opening an issue because what we're going to say is like, well, okay, this might be interesting, but this needs a discussion on the mailing list and needs the RFC process and all of that. And I know people, like some people dislike the fact it's like a mailing list and, oh, it's like quite archaic, but it's also kind of convenient because we're not tied to anything and like any device can read an email. It's also very easy to filter emails like and be with what you want to be notified and everything. So language changes go into that. I mean, bug fixing, if you want to fix a bug, please fix the bug. If you just encounter something which seems a bit strange, open an issue so that we can be like, okay, no, that's a bug. That's actually expected behavior. There are many ways that you can contribute, which are not, oh, I need to actually learn C and like start writing C code like now immediately. So
Yeah, and the basics of the C language aren't that different to any other language anyway. So once you know the basics of programming, you can transfer and learn the extra bits that you need to worry about.
Yeah, I think there's also certain things like PHP makes, like the because of how the engine is done, makes it a bit easier. Again, like I said, like we have like a lot of C macros, which is like this sort of metaprogramming. Let's call it metaprogramming for the sake of it. That happens before and does a lot of abstraction, which can be very nice to approach various different things. Like I said, like you have a for each for like like a PHP array, which internally we call a hash table. So you can just iterate as if you would do like a for each in PHP code in C, and it will do all of it for you. So that's kind of nice and convenient. So yeah, it's C is still different because you have all of the whole memory allocations and pointers to need to wrap your head around, but I think different people understand pointers in different ways. But that's like the main hurdle.
And that's just like the layer on top that C needs. The C language is done for us in PHP. We don't need to worry about that because somebody else has managed that. And thank you, whoever managed that for PHP, because I would not want to do pointers in PHP.
Well, I guess you sometimes do actually pointers with PHP with objects, technically, but that's like...
Yeah, true, but not quite. I know what you mean, though.
Yeah, you don't need to do memory management. It's the main advantage.
Is this where we ask Mike if he has any idea what we're talking about?
At this point, I'm just going to hear from us from our partner now.
So yeah, let's do
my
that.
My brain can never break.
Thank you to our partners at phpscore.com. Every app builds up technical debt over time. It's the price we pay for shipping new features and moving fast. When we build up too much of it, though, it can start to impact how we work. Team velocity suffers, bugs become more frequent and take longer to fix, and everyone starts to get a little frustrated. The key to managing debt is to measure it. A credit score can help you understand how well you're managing your financial debt, and now there's a credit score for your technical debt. Go to phpscore.com to get a free technical debt score and monitoring for all of your PHP applications today.
Thank you,
PHP Score.
So let's bring the knowledge down a bit. I have no knowledge of C. I'm fairly new into the PHP world, so it's very interesting to me about the whole process that you go through when making changes. So you have the RFC process. I'm interested to see what that looks like from a internal developer's view. So we get to hear little bits on the outside, but it'd be interesting to hear from you what that process is like.
I mean, the process is very open. So officially, all of the discussion happens on the mailing list. In practice, there's like discussions in private between sometimes individual. We like on the foundation Slack, where like a few people are, where like there's more like direct, like immediate communication which can happen, or if we have questions, which are like okay, we might ask questions and then we post it all in a nice formal answer. But even then, like anybody can participate and anybody can join in a discussion on the mailing list. I think on the new, like there's the news.php.net, there's like all of the mailing lists. And even if you haven't joined the initial thread, you can still get like an email digest or link that allows you to reply to it, which gets you into the mailing, like the chain, associated to it. So that's basically it. Otherwise, it's somebody, you submit an RFC, so you submit a proposal, you write it down. At minimum, it's 2 weeks discussion. Then it's 2 weeks voting time. And then that's decided if it's accepted or declined. If it's accepted, then it just gets implemented. Or normally what happens is somebody has an implementation and then the review gets a bit more intense. We figure out all of the stuff and then we just merge it. certain small features like can get in without an RFC, but most of them do, especially if there's like only like there's a bit of controversial stuff. If it follows a spec, like for example, for the DOM extension, if it just like, oh, we just add something that is in the spec, then normally we just don't necessarily go through the process because it's like, well, we're just implementing stuff that already exists. Same as like for the curl constants, oh, there's new features in curl, we're not gonna like make an RFC for every single constant. But like the majority of it does go through it. And it's like, yeah, like 2 weeks discussion that anybody can like, there's no, oh, you need to be a core members to be able to like propose something. Anybody can request RFC karma, like, which is basically write access on the wiki to write an RFC. So normally for newcomers, what happens is that you write an email to the internals list being like, oh, I have this idea, gather some initial feedback to be told like, yes, no, maybe this is complicated. Mm-hmm. And if so, then you can decide, oh, well, I actually want to formally like propose this, get the RFC karma. And yeah, so the discussion period starts when you send the formal introduction to the RFC. So any discussion that happened prior is more just exploratory work.
Yeah.
And usually it's recommended for new contributors or to send an email to gather ideas. More experienced developers just like, okay, just propose the RFC directly. You probably know what you're doing and why you're proposing a specific change.
Okay, what's the next steps after that? So you've proposed the changes you would like to do. What sort of things you need to do, or what happens within the internals next?
So the thing is, normally with an IFC, like you need somebody to implement it, which usually will be yourself or somebody that you associate. So if you don't have somebody to implement the IFC, then normally it just stays there. Like, I think a notable example is like an IFC for generics. Like if you propose an IFC for generics and being, we want this, but you don't have an implementation for it, it's like, okay, even if we accept the IFC, it's not actually going to get landed into the language. So normally what happens is people have an implementation, then propose an RFC to be like, this is what I'm proposing, and this is the associated implementation to it.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's one of us that writes it, then like we gather reviews. But that's, yeah, it's a very loose, there is not much process. It's like, yeah, 2 weeks discussion, you submit. You can even say like, ignore all of the discussion and just open vote. It's bad etiquette, but you can technically do that. To have it open for 2 weeks and then decide yes or no, or cancel the vote midway, because sadly what still sometimes happens is that people start reading the RFC when it goes to vote rather than before, because we're all a bit busy. So what has happened a few times is that somebody starts an RFC vote, some people realize like crucial mistakes, so then it gets halted and cancelled. Discussion happens, issues get resolved, and then it gets restarted. Because as a policy, if an RFC is declined, you need to wait 6 months before resubmitting it, unless major changes happen to it. But major changes are also very fluffy in what it means. So there are rules, and they exist, but it's a lot of vibe-based, kind of.
So on that... one thing that I have never actually found is, obviously we have the wiki that we can go to and we can check, is there an RSS feed or something like that of RFCs that come in? Because I'll often find an RFC just after Paul Dragunas has posted the result.
I mean, so officially, because they're all announced on the internals mailing list, the way would be to subscribe to the internal mailing list. Or, I mean, as somebody put in chat, like there's like externals.io where you can see. Now, yeah, the problem with that is not all of the discussion that happens on internals is just RFCs. I think one of the ways is that to get a digest, I think like a weekly digest of like, oh, what are the threads and like, what are the topics? So that's a way to get informed about it. But yeah, a lot of it doesn't happen. I guess like a lot of it just doesn't happen as to announcing oh, does this RFC that is being proposed necessarily? That's an idea I might need to ask to Derek, because he deals with websites, to be able to, maybe we should have an RSS feed for RFCs. I don't know how easy that is to do, but that's an idea. I will write that down.
Need an RFC about the RFC RSS? And that is a sentence that should never exist.
No, I guess it's just, I mean, the thing is, like, the wiki we use is also an open source project. Like, it's Docker Wiki. So I don't know if Docker Wiki has like an RSS feed for stuff, which might just be the answer. So it either exists already and nobody knows about it, or it's a setting that somehow needs to be enabled. But I wouldn't be surprised if it's either or neither.
So I saw you talk at PHP UK. Sorry, I nearly said the wrong conference name then. I had to stop myself and think earlier this year. With some interesting things in PHP people that a lot of people don't know are actually there. Have you? What sort of funny stories have you got when you got into learning the internals of it all, finding these weird and wonderful things that are in the language?
So there's the typical thing. I was like, oh, people report bugs, and then you submit like bug fixes, or you try to fix a bug. One of these was trying to fix a bug in SPL. I think it was the file object, like in a way it returned data. And I got around to it. I got a fix done. It turns out it's like, oh, I needed to, like, I did a bunch of refactoring before, and then I did the fix, and I submitted the fix. And then it got into a minor release, like into a patch release. And then within 3 days of it getting released, people were opening a bunch of issues, being like, yeah, you just broke all of our code. Because they worked around the bug, because the bug has existed for 17 years. So my bug fix, it looks to them like a bug. So the thing which we have all established, and I think a lot of people do as the mistake at the beginning, it's like, oh, let me fix SPL. And then you learn, it's like, oh, every time you try to fix SPL, it actually causes more problems. So SPL is just this immutable thing that we don't really touch. So all behavior that has exist and exists is known to be used and known to cause problems. Mm-hmm. Other stuff is just, I guess, playing around with the language. Is I do like a test matrix data. Like I will have like, you have like an array of all of different possible values, and you just try to plug them into functions, which like, oh, what happens here? One of these is the range function, where it turns out you could get an empty array out of it, which shouldn't be possible, because normally a range, even if it's an empty range, it's either like it's your starting point. Should at least be included. And the way that you got there, and I don't know how we got there anyway, but the range function has start and step function, step parameters. And if you put like not a number, which is a valid floating point number value, as the step, you'd get an empty array. So stuff that should never happen, but you know, it happens. So that's like the thing is like, okay, these semantics are just a bit bonkers. There was a few other stuff, because it also accepts strings as inputs and does like ASCII ranges and features. You're like, whoever decided on this? Why? Primarily, why? And yeah, that's like, I submitted an RFC to be like, okay, these semantics are kind of a bit whack. Can we try to make them somewhat more sensible? So you can't get an empty array from range since I think 8.3 or 8.2.
I don't remember. See, I was going to go and try that after this live stream.
Well, you still can. You still can try. It's been a while. It seems like now if you try, you get like a error, either a warning or an error to be like, oh, you need like a finite value for like another number, because you could also put infinity as your step, which is like, oh, that's good. So it's just a lot of playing around with the language and finding different things and exploring and being like, this seems weird. Or just staring at the code base. I think that's another thing which I do quite a bit, is just I will go through extensions and I will just stare at the code base to see like, oh, this is very convoluted. Like, let me see if I can refactor this to be more intuitive. And the amount of times it happens that you just stare at it and it's like, what happens if I do this? And then you just take it out and you're just like, oh, it blows up. So that happens. I think like at one point there were quite a few bugs that I fixed, like in the LDAP extension, because it did no null checks. Like, it just assumed everything was perfect. And the thing which I'm amazed is that nobody ever reported a bug, which either tells me two things: nobody uses this feature, or the people that use this feature know how to use it, so they don't break it. But ideally, we shouldn't do that. But yeah, that's normally my process of finding weird stuff in the language. It's just staring at it and being like, poking at it. It's like, what happens if I do that?
It's kind of sounding like I need to resurrect a talk I used to do called WTF PHP and just start pointing out some of these really stupid ones. JavaScript just makes it too easy. PHP, on the other hand, at least they're not quite as...
That's a funny thing, is because like, I don't know, like, was it last year or like 2 years where there was like this round of like 25 JavaScript questions and like to make a test? And I have multiple friends that are like professional JavaScript developers, and they only got like 3 or 4 questions right. And they all were like, oh, Gina, you try this test. Like, let's see how it was. And like, I stare at the question. And then I start like going, like I start explaining what I think goes through my head as to like, what is the possible reasoning of what the language does. And all of my friends just stare at me like, you're completely insane. What the hell is going on? I think we got 18 out of 25 correct. And most of them is just that, like, oh, I didn't know this coercion rule happens in JavaScript. I was like, okay, well, fair enough. But yeah, all of my friends were like, you are actually insane. I'm like, maybe.
I mean, at this point, I kind of wonder if that's needed in JavaScript. But so I think another area that I like to look at is the documentation. So obviously, we have comments on there that are going back 20, 25, 30 years. Some of those comments are not quite what we should be doing now.
Yeah, let me check how many notes we actually have right now, because we do have them.
While you're doing that, I just remind everyone that is watching, wherever you are watching, you can join us in our Discord, and you can post some questions in there, and we're keeping an eye on the chat, as you can see on screen. And you can ask any question and hopefully we'll be able to answer them.
I'm not okay. Can I see all the nodes? Like, view vote table. Oh, no, this might have been a bad idea. I think this is just like I have a view into the database. Again, I'm not exactly sure. I don't know. Oh, no, user contributing voting statistics. Let's see how long this takes to open. Oh, no, this is like the votes. It's not actually how many notes there are. Interesting fact, there are like 320,000 downvotes, like across all user comments, apparently. Normally with the notes, like since I think last year, there's a script which runs monthly, which deletes notes which have less than 5 negative votes. So if there's a note that is bad, actually just downvote it. And if enough people do it, then it should get deleted. That's recently. I don't know if it has like, oh, it needs to be at least 1 year old. That I don't remember. But that's the thing that got introduced recently because, yeah, like a lot of notes are just bad and they exist. And a lot of them are like 20, 25 years old. What happens sometimes is, the thing with notes is that they're actually not tied to the documentation. So the documentation lives separately from the notes. The notes are just in a database and are rendered together. So if you have documentation access, you don't actually have access to editing notes. So that's a bit of a quirk way. But what happens sometimes when I review, not documentation, like we call it a book, like an extension book, I will go through the function and just like stare. And like, if they like downvoted quite a lot, I just will just delete. Or it's like, oh, this is out of date. Or if it mentions like, oh, PHP 4 or PHP 5, I'm like, well, okay, that's probably just out of date and not applicable anymore. Mm. So can probably get deleted. But I think the other thing is like, if you see something in a node which is useful, then maybe trying to incorporate this into the documentation and then being like, oh, like have a PR, which is, oh, I'm incorporating nodes. Like there's because all the nodes have an ID. And if you say this, then we can go and delete it afterwards. We are aware of the node situation. It is, should get, go be better. And if you really hate a node, just downvote it and get all of your friends to downvote it and your friends and colleagues. And if you downvote something to Oblivion, then it'll get deleted. In a month's time, but not if all the process works well and all of the cron drops works, but I'm aware there are a lot of ifs here. just ping somebody if it doesn't get deleted, because then there's a problem somewhere.
I got a feeling you might have a few pings soon. I mean, when I first started learning PHP, that I did get tripped up a couple of times where you just don't realize, because you're so new to it, that some of those comments are so out of date that things just don't work that way anymore. So yeah, I've been tripped up a few times myself in the early days. So
yeah, I was going to say is like the problem is like the thing with the PHP documentation as well is that like it's not like stuff that is, I want to say, in control of like PHP. Like PHP has a bunch of bundled libraries or bundled extensions within like PHP SRC, like the Git repo. But there are also other extensions which are documented on PHP.net. And some of them, like, I mean, Imagic is one of the big ones. Like, we don't actually know anything about it, but the documentation is still there. So then that's also where like there's some friction, is that, well, we can either just blindly accept changes, or we can try to double check it and ask like the maintainers of the extensions. But some extensions aren't really active anymore, and like we do try and cycle them out. Like normally we do it at every like major release, where we basically remove the old docs, and then all of the extensions that we know don't work anymore, then those get out as well. But that also explains why like a lot of like part of the documentation has like different standards. Some aspects are very well documented, some not so much. I mean, if you look at the reflection docs, you will be encountered quite on a few pages with like, this function is not yet documented, which is not ideal. So it's just like a lot of big effort to get stuff done. And I think there's like a few different, I mean, there are tools like which can show you which pages are not documented. But yeah, that's also an easy way to contribute. It's like, if you actually know how something works and the documentation is not, like, doesn't exist or is wrong, then just sending a PR, minimum an issue, but better a PR is the answer.
See, I would normally do an issue with a PR. Here's the problem and here's the solution.
That works. We just accept just a plain PR. Like, it doesn't need to be tied to an issue, effectively. So you can just open a PR and this fixes this, and we'll just merge it. Because GitHub sometimes doesn't link properly between the issue and the PR, and then it's a nightmare. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to just backtrack a little bit. You did mention earlier about the PHP Foundation. Most people out there will know what the PHP Foundation is, but would you mind just explaining to us what the PHP Foundation is, what they do for us, so for anyone that doesn't know?
Yeah, So I will caveat this that I'm paid by the foundation. So I vaguely know the structure, but I'm not on the board and I don't know how it works necessarily with sponsors. But effectively, so the PHP Foundation is this non-profit organization on Open Collective, which is the best way to describe Open Collective is foundation as a service platform, where companies and also individuals, but ideally companies, sponsor the foundation to varying degrees to basically allow the foundation to allocate funds to developers to do maintenance on the programming language. The best way I've had this described was by Juliet, in that, and this is not just the foundation, this is funding of any open source project in general, is that financing an open source project is your insurance policy that this project is maintained. You don't start paying for fire insurance when your house is burning. You do this before. So that's the visual idea to put in mind. So currently we are 11 developers. Some of are part-time. I think only three of us are full-time, as far as I'm aware, which is me, Arno, and Ilya, who are paid full-time by the foundation, and other people are various degrees, either 1 day, 2 days. I think it also might be go to 3 days per week. We work very flexible hours. I mean, I think it was yesterday or today that it got announced that we're well, there's a new round of hiring. I don't know, like on the foundation, it closes soon, or it closes end of October, I think. With the caveat is like, this all depends on budget. I don't know what the budget situation is for the foundation because I'm not on the board. And I don't know what's like, how many companies finance and like what the cash flow is. But I think if your company contributes, I think it's $12,000 a year, so it's like $1,000 a month. You get like silver, it's like silver sponsorship, like status, and you get like, you get something. There's also gold sponsorship, which in technically it means like there exists a way for us to get feedback from a certain group of companies that like sponsor a lot. I don't know how often this gets used. I think I know it got used with the Property Hooks RFC, where Larry and Ilya had an initial implementation and they brought it to them, and a lot of the sponsors were like, well, we don't think this actually works quite well. More as like, oh, we have the expertise as users of the language. Because that can happen as core developers, you actually start writing less PHP. So you get a bit rusty. I mean, we still use it. I mean, the joke is the most PHP we write is in tests, but it's not always true. So that's it. So like, the foundation gathers money from companies to sponsor a bit as an insurance policy, so that it can finance developers, core developers to work on it, and other projects such as the security audit that got financed by the German government. There are other like major refactorings or major toolings. I think Jakub got like part of like his STF grant, which is the German sovereign tech fund, was to work on a tool to better test FPM, because that also had like a bunch of nasty bugs. And I think it's a lot of this sort of stuff is to make the language maintain and evolve, but also what it is actually pay people to review PRs. The thing is, like, I spend about 40 to 50% of my time actually reviewing PRs and participating in discussions for other people who are not paid by the foundation to get commits done and get them merged. I think when I started contributing before that happened, there used to only really be Nikita, and Nikita was already very thin stretched. So it meant that like you could submit a PR and then it would take 3 months to get reviewed. And then by then you might have moved on. You probably forgot the whole context as to why you did this. Like, the review comments might not make any sense to you anymore. Like, I'm not saying it's always perfect. Like, we still sometimes, like, it takes, like, time to get reviewed, but at least it's, like, more quick. And so it means that, like, more people can get contributions in and merge at a faster rate. I think that's the main benefit of what the foundation provides is, yeah, funding people's time to actually review code rather than just writing code and adding it to the code base.
Now, I think you've kind of answered my second question in there. Well, actually, my second and third, because the second one was, are you working for the foundation, which you were? I think you might have mentioned that earlier. I couldn't remember. But yep. I was just double checking. But the getting the take from you on how you feel that the foundation has now helped PHP and other core developers, do you think it's been a benefit to them?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, I think before it has always been a bit the you do it on free time, or like your company sponsors you for like a bit to work on it, and it's usually then like motivation driven. It's like, oh, we want this specific SIG, and I mean, it's like not to throw shades to all of the APM products, but some of the changes that they've landed, which for the benefit, it makes the language better, was also driven to like, okay, we want a better insight into observability within the engine. And so we want to like have hooks into the engine, which allow us to profile better the language and give better data to like end users that like, oh, how profiling their own applications and like metrics and stuff like that. Or fixing bugs in Opcache. Like, this is also stuff. It's like Opcache is very, very difficult. I find it still very obtuse. Like, I understand some of it. Like, but like when there is a bug in Opcache, it can be very difficult to figure out and difficult to resolve, because it sometimes depends on like, oh, is it because it's a race condition? Is it just like we've messed up in some way how we've written stuff to the shared memory? And somebody like having multiple people that have some expertise on this, which we now have, helps also, because it's not just one single person writing like a thing and then like, oh, if something happens to them or they just want to move on for the project, then you just inherited bunch of code and like it's like you don't know how it works, and like if you need to fix a bug in it, it's even harder because you don't even have access to the person which has the knowledge.
Yeah, that is one of the worst possible places to be, the bus factor of one.
I think that's a key point. It's like the bus factor, like it used to be two, then Nikita left, so it was basically one. And then the foundation was, in some sense, because of the bus factor, when Joe wrote his post, I think 2019, 2020, I don't remember exactly when it was, that's when it started to get a bit in place of like, oh, we should set something up. And then Nikita wanting to leave to move on to LLVM basically accelerated this. But if this wouldn't have happened, like, I don't know if people know, but like Dmitry Stogov, who was hired by Zend for a long time, basically is no longer part of Zend. Let me phrase this in a diplomatic way. If he was the only one that knew Opcache and knew the JIT and he couldn't work on it anymore, then that would be a massive problem for the language itself. And so the foundation has like clearly prevented this from happening.
Yeah, I think that is the absolute beauty of the foundation, that you can see the problems that might occur and use the funds to plug that. So if you have a bug that nobody understands, you can find a consultant somewhere to pay to help and things like that keep the language moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't got external people. I mean, for the security audit, yes.
I was using it as an example. Like, for example, if there's something wrong with debugging, then the obvious choice is Derek.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I think that is one of the things that the PHP Foundation makes so easy. And by having it on Open Collective, you can literally see the money that goes in, the money that goes out, the amount of funds that are left. I mean,
yeah,
anybody with 10 minutes and a bit of spare time could work out exactly how much anybody is paid at the foundation.
Yes.
It's
yes. Which, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, like, it is very transparent. I mean, some people think it's too transparent, but I think it's better that it is that way. I know that, like, some of the, like, the Drupal community, they were looking a bit into it, and they, like, I mean, some of them, like, asked to me, especially in Europe, because they have, like, a bit of the same problem where, like, they have a financing problem for actually financing developers to work on Drupal itself. And the benefit of Open Collective is, yeah, that everything is transparent and, like, oh, you know where the money goes, and it's not hidden away in layers and layers of paperwork and abstractions and at a financial report at the end of the year, basically.
And it's interesting to see that the foundation has led to the security review, which has led to improvements in security, and it's also led to identifying that one that still isn't public yet and finding something that is core importance. Because of the existence of the foundation, it's incredible to think that literally somebody's fiver that they dropped on there contributed to making that happen.
Mm. Yep. Oh, yeah. I mean, ideally, like I said, it would be companies more than individual developers, because, like, it's a bit crude to say, but, like, I think most developers, like, if PHP goes down, most developers, you can pivot to, like, learning a new programming language and do stuff. A company, if your whole tech stack is PHP or any other programming language for that matter, like, if something happens to it, crucially, your company basically goes bust. Like,
I mean, we probably have a problem with the name PHP Architect.
directly, but I mean, the thing is, like I think this is also a thing which maybe I want to touch on, is that, like, many people think just of PHP as just, like, oh, it's just web, it's just like the web, but it is also so much more. I mean, I like when I was in Japan, I talked to a few people there, is that, like, they run whole game servers, like, on PHP. Like, they have game servers running on Laravel, which are integrated into Unity, which, like, talk to each other with Unity. And like, that sort of thing, like, a bunch of financial institutions run on, like, on PHP, like, hate it or love it. Like, many, many things, like, run on PHP in ways that are not obvious.
I mean, I discovered not long ago that Bethesda actually used Laravel behind the scenes for a lot of their stuff.
That doesn't surprise me, actually. Like, it's like the thing, like, WordPress, you know, also... WordPress, a bunch of people, like, oh, hate WordPress because, you know, if you, like, do Laravel and Symfony and stuff, and but it's still important, and, like, the ecosystem is, like, many government websites are not even just written in WordPress; they demand, like, that it is written in WordPress, or like other CMSs like Drupal, and, like, I think UNICEF runs on Drupal, and it's like, oh, it's in so many different places that people don't advertise, because it's not like PHP is not sexy, like, because it works, it runs, it's old boring tech, and so people don't advertise it because it has like stigma as a company. So I think that's also a thing, is just, like, you know, in the spirit of the podcast, you know, if your company uses PHP, maybe advertise this a bit more, and, like, don't be afraid of, like, saying that you run on PHP.
So we've got Eric is in the background, and he keeps putting stuff in chat and completely putting me off.
I almost want to bring him in to explain that one.
I've lost my train of thought now. Thanks, Eric. I can see him giggling. I've got a little image of him on the screen. I can see him giggling. Exactly. This is what this show's about, is about trying to say, no, the PHP is still here. We're still alive and we're still kicking. It's 30 years old and it is still improving. And it was all inspired back for PHP UK this year, where I sat in the audience and I think you were part of the panel at the end, weren't you?
Yeah. You were on the panel. Neil's
comment was just struck a chord in my brain when he said about stop saying in your titles, as your videos, in your articles, that PHP is not dead. I made this with PHP, because people that have got that bad taste in their mouth for PHP is just going to read PHP dead.
Yeah,
that's it. So we need to start using more positive words to promote PHP. And I have to say, it's quite interesting, because the last couple of weeks, I've seen so many posts on LinkedIn and other places. Well, I can't remember, probably on Twitter or X, I should say, else I'll get in trouble. that have got the same thing. It's an image saying, whatever year, PHP is dead, learn this. And every year for so many years, so PHP is dead, learn this. And then saying, the actual post of the person says, I've never listened to any of this. I've always stuck with PHP and we're still here using PHP today. The problem is with that is people are just going to see the image that says PHP is dead, learn this. And you're just going to see people are just going to see a list of alternative languages to learn. And that is one of the big things. I feel like replying to all of these and say, take this down. This is not helping PHP. We need to be more positive with our language. So
yeah, I've just started linking them to the podcast, to be fair.
Yeah.
On every single one, I'm dropping a link to the podcast.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been screenshotting I have put in a few talks. So people that have actually watched the first two episodes will know that I struggle a lot with social anxiety, and I've been encouraged by a number of people to start doing some talks. And I've had a lot of imposter syndrome about it, but I have put in some talks, and one of them might feature some of those slides. So I've been taking screenshots of all these.
I mean, yeah, I think, if we just talk a bit about like conference speaking, like I didn't, I got actually invited to speak at my first conference. Like I was like, people say, I was like, oh, you know, you're a core developer, you know, like, oh, do you want to give a talk? And I was like, well, what do you want me to talk about? I was like, I don't know what to talk about. which like, we all have this. I think this is a common thing, is like, oh, we all have this. It's like, what do I have to bring like as a talk? And it's like, oh, I might just be rehashing the documentation of a tool. Like people can just read it. But I think it's like you might bring your perspective or like your explanation to a tool or like what it benefits you in a certain way, or like the way that you might just explain a topic will click with somebody. And even if it just clicks with one person where it didn't click before, that's like important. And the more voices and more different people you have expressing topics, that is very helpful. But like, yeah, I still like, you know, I get nervous just before going on stage and like, you know, presenting and everything. And I did drama for like 6 years before, and it still happens. You're going to feel the anxiety and the stress, but I think it's also a very rewarding experience. And yes, you get rejected plenty of times from CFP. I also get rejected. Don't worry about that. Like, it's not like, I've had this discussion, I think like 2 weeks ago when I was at a conference, that people was like, oh, you never get rejected, do you, Gene? I'm like, actually plenty of times. Like it's, like even at a PHP conference, I get rejected. Like it's not because like you, like somebody has like a name to themselves that they are automatically going to get accepted. And I think it's good for people to try and give talks and like start and share knowledge.
I think that's interesting you say that about the name, because when we're doing the picking for the talks for PHP Tech, obviously that is open at the moment, where you can put in for your talks now. Please do. And when we close that, what happens then? Oh, there you go. John's just jumped in and said he's just submit to Tech. John will put out and say we'll ask for some volunteers to help pick the talks, and we go through this whole process of voting. We get three, and all we get is the name of the talk and a short description. We have no idea who it is that's doing the talk, and we just vote out of the three which ones we would like to see. And that goes out to all the staff at PHP Architect and some people that volunteer to help pick. And then it goes off to John and Eric. I don't know what they do with them then, but they do something with them.
final like judgment call.
Probably to completely disregard what we voted for and just pick what they want.
I think so. I know quite a few like of the conference organizers in France, like stuff. And like normally how it works, like they also do like a blind. Mm-hmm. But what happens is like, oh, if somebody got selected twice, like, you know, oh, they got two talks. What they might do is just like, okay, which one, like we want one talk and there's like another one. And it's like, oh, like has somebody else proposed like a topic of this that we can like take instead? But I mean, every different conference have like their ways of determining, and apparently PHP Tech is just RNG, roll of the dice. And apparently I never got lucky is what I'm learning.
Oh dear. Yeah.
I mean, rolling dice is definitely a random way of doing it.
Just shows how geeky we all are.
D20, D6, D8, D10, D12.
Depends how many you've submitted, I suppose.
That's yes. Fair.
Well, we'll see how that all pans out. So we are getting to sort of our time limit that we aim for. I do have one last question for you. We've asked everyone, but what excites you, it's a word I cannot say tonight, excites you about PHP at the moment with what's going on or coming up?
I mean, it's weird because with like PHP 8.5, like tagged and branched, mm-hmm. So it's just like, oh, okay, this is going to be there. That's cool. That's great. And there are some things that I'm looking forward to, like the pipe operator already. I'm writing tooling and I'm like, oh God, I need this. like this is stuff. And where it's like, so that I'm quite excited, but I'm excited for stuff that hopefully will land in like PHP next. That who knows if it's 8.6 or if it's 9. That still needs to get decided at one point. But I mean, there are a few things which I know Arnaud, which didn't land in 8.5 due to time constraints and everything, are partial function applications, which would make also pipes nicer to use. Because pipe basically requires like a function which only takes one argument to be passed, like to be changed down, like along. And like, so PFAs, what they allow you is taking like a function with multiple arguments and already pre-setting some of the arguments so that you can, instead of needing to write short closures everywhere. So that's one. I mean, I'll guess I'll plug in my own thing that I'm working on, which is generics on interfaces that I hope to get somewhat done and sorted and hopefully accepted. It doesn't work on classes, so you can't just replace like new collection stuff due to technical reasons, but that's something I am working on and hopefully will get done next year if it doesn't take all of my time and more. I think PHP is like, more stuff is happening. Plenty of stuff is happening. Mm. So much to see forward, and a lot of stuff that I don't even know is going to happen because like somebody new just comes in and contributes something. I was like, oh, this is a neat idea. If you have an idea, just you can submit a patch if you're brave enough, I guess is the, is the carrier.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, go on, Chris.
That is kind of how native PHP came about. They just said, how can we make mobile apps work? Answer is like this.
Yep. I mean, it's also like with Frank and PHP, right? Is they like, I mean, I talked to Kevin quite a bit, but like he just plugged in different things. It's just like, oh, it works. And I mean, like, I think they announced 2 weeks ago that you can write Go extensions now with, for Frank and PHP too. Like, if you have Go code, you can like plug it into like Frank and PHP and everything and just have like one thing. I don't exactly know how it works because I have never written Go, so please do not ask me. But it that's cool. Like, that's also new and that's happening. So yeah, and then all of the frameworks exist and do stuff. I mean, Tempest is a new framework, looks cool, they do stuff. Hey, Tempest it's amazing. You can do loads of stuff.
There's quite a few people talking about Tempest, and Liam here is absolutely right. You can just do things. And John posted that one for you, Gina.
Yeah, thanks. If you need a speaker or like somebody to join you on the podcast, just send me like a text and I'll come back and ramble. Like, I'm happy to just ramble.
They don't mind that. Did you see what day was it, last Thursday's episode?
I haven't. I'm actually very bad. I'm very bad at following podcasts. Like, especially with the deadlines. It's just like stuff got crammed. So
last Thursday's episode was Jim Secund, who, as we all know, is a nice, quiet, retiring type that definitely doesn't talk much.
I did not go had a 3-day drinking session at a conference 2 weeks ago with Jim. Not at all.
No, not at all.
Never.
That wouldn't happen.
We didn't go to bed at 4 a.m. No.
I mean,
why would we ever do this? We are responsible human beings.
I don't believe you.
that's why you should go to conferences.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not just.
Sorry, are you saying you should go to conferences for a 4-day drinking session with Jim?
Yes.
Right.
Yes. I think it's just, like, the social aspect of conferences is very important. Mm. Like, and also you can talk. Like, we don't bite actually. Like, it seems like that, and we seem important, but we don't bite. And if you have like the misfortune of being with me and just hear me ranting for like 2 hours straight. Can we have another conference?
I went to PHP Tech for the first time this year, and I'd sat on a sofa with Sarah and a couple of others for like 3 or 4 hours before I realized who Sarah was. And it's like, how have I sat here talking to somebody who is a core developer and not known that? But also, that's awesome.
That's cool. Like, that's what conferences are for. It's like, you talk to people and then you realize like, oh wait, I know you from that.
I was at Tech for the first time last year, and it was an interesting experience for me. I hadn't been to any PHP conferences yet. I was obviously there to work, but still had the chance to sit down and chat with people. And although if you see me at conferences, 9 times out of 10, you'll need to come and talk to me first, and then I'll start chatting, because I can't approach people and start talking. That's part of my social anxieties that I have. But once you come and talk to me, then we'll talk for ages about all sorts of rubbish. But I remember just sitting like Ben Ramsey, just chatting along with Ben Ramsey, and then realizing who he was. Someone like that being so open and just talking to anyone, there's no sort of elitist group of people that are all the big names in our community. It's all one community, and
I think PHP is probably one of the friendliest communities and has like some of the friendliest conferences. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. There are so many conferences which are just nice community vibes, very enjoyable, everybody's approachable. Like, basically any speaker you want to go to, mm-hmm. like, you can just go and like talk to us, like, except maybe like the hour before we have our conference, because then a few of us are stressed. Well, maybe I'm just talking for myself here. but most of the time we're happy to chat and talk, and Also, feel free, even like, I think this is like, this is pro tip for conferences. Even if you like, if you have social anxiety, like one thing that can help is just like, normally conferences have like these like standing tables where like people eat or have like a glass like of water and everything. Like if people are talking, just walk there, and like people will like start including you into the conversation. Like it's like, it's not strange for you to just walk up to a table and just like start listening and like seeing what the discussion is about.
Yeah, I've not actually been able to come up with the courage to do that yet. That is one of those weird I also have issues, difficulties walking into a venue without someone, or knowing that there's someone I'm meeting is already in the venue, because I can't just say that's for someone that has social anxiety, that's quite a big thing to try and do. Luckily for me, at PitchP UK this year, I sat at a table and someone came and sat at the table next to me and just started chatting, and that's kind of what I need. After that, it's fine.
It's usually the first person, right? It's like, because when the first person you meet and introduce, they will then introduce you to other people, and then it's like, oh, if you're there with your colleagues, then you can introduce them to them. It's like, it's normally like the first like contact that is difficult. What I'm learning is just conferences need like a big sign that you can put on yourself, is like, please talk to me, I'm scared.
Yes. I found something similar to that for the last two techs I've been at. In the evenings, in the main hall, we like do social stuff, and people bring board games, are playing poker, karaoke. If you ever want to see Sarah do karaoke, you got to come along. And I just sit there with a chess set, and anyone can come and play chess with me. So
I've tried to get back into chess. I had like a 3 weeks period where I got very back into it, and then I'm like, oh god, it's like chess is so difficult that I'm just stuck at a plateau, and I don't want to like learn. It's a difficult game. Like easy to learn, hard to master. But yeah, like also yeah, Pac-Man rule. Yeah, in a group, leave some space, so that people can come in or like try to invite people. It's always a bit awkward. It's like when you see somebody in a group and you're like, I want to be part of it, please.
Yeah, unfortunately, I've especially at tech, I've tended to disappear to go and eat my food. But on the other side of it, I don't see all the people I work with. I don't see them on a day-to-day basis because we're spread all over the world. So I tend to go and join chat with them, because it's a nice time for us to bond as a team, because we're during work hours, we're just talking work. That's one of the things that we do. But conferences, the community is great. Try and get to your local conferences. It doesn't have to be PHP Tech, but we'd love to see anyone come over to Tech. I found that is a very family sort of feel. I felt very welcome when I've been. And as you say, you just bump into all sorts of people, and they're just willing to chat to you about any old stuff. There's no stigma about some of these people that are big names within the community. So, yeah, I think that is a good point to start wrapping up, I think. So I'd like to say again, thank you very much for your time today to chat to us and give us a bit of an insight of what it's like to work on the internals and the foundation.
Always happy. Always happy. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we might have you back on to talk about some other stuff at some point.
I'm going to convince Jim to come on live, and on that one we're inviting you as well, Gina, because I can't see that going wrong.
This is going to be very good entertainment.
Yep.
Productive? Who knows? Entertainment, for sure.
The one thing I will say before we do finish off, please have a look at the thumbnail, because you will probably ask the same question as me. Is Jim the cat?
wait. Let me do it. Or can somebody send me a link in like our
Yeah, while you're looking at that, I'll just remind people about the swag store. We have t-shirts. Let's just check. Yeah, Chris is on it. cool. We have t-shirts, we have some hats. Yeah, but this is one of my favorite t-shirts. I'm gonna have to get my hands on them. So yeah, head over to the store.phparch.com to check out what t-shirts and things you can get hold of. If you're listening to the audio podcast, make sure you get over to Discord. Come and join us at Discord. It's not just for the live shows. There's people that hang out there in there all through the week and some great conversations. That is discord.pitchparch.com. Have you found the image now?
It's very funny. his cat. Like his cat seems also like being slightly the why am I here? Why am I done?
I should have had that queued up to put on the stream, but I haven't. So everyone's going to have to head to our YouTube channel to check that one out. And don't forget about our magazine discount, Alive 3. And Chris, you have to correct me if I'm wrong, but is that three months on an annual subscription? For the
digital
not the printed, the digital. That's a bit I forget. on the digital. Yeah, and YouTube is YouTube/@PHP Arch. Again, thank you very much for joining us. We have a little bit of exciting news. We originally were going to go with every 2 weeks. I'm going to stop saying fortnightly because I'm confusing all our American friends. They don't know what fortnightly is. And Eric,
there's only one of our American friends confused by this.
Well, Eric just thought we were gaming.
you could make it worse. You could say bi-weekly.
Which either means twice a week or once every 2 weeks.
We've had that. That debate did happen. That debate, I think that was in Discord. We had a debate about that. But we were originally doing every 2 weeks. But we seem to have got a backlog of pre-recorded. So we are going to be releasing one every week. So next week, we'll have a new episode. I can't tell you which one it is yet because Joe in the chat's just Fortnite. next week, we'll have a new episode. And hopefully the following week, so in 2 weeks' time or in a fortnight's time, We'll be live again with another guest. So thank you again for your time today. And we'll definitely have to try and meet up at a conference sometime and go on a... Actually, I don't know if I can't do what... I don't think I could do a three-day drinking. I'm just too old for that now.
No, the thing is, like, every single time I say I will not do this, and then I get dragged along. That happens every single time.
Well, maybe we'll meet up soon and maybe you'll be a guest back on the show at some point. But thank you very much. Thank you everyone for listening and watching, and we'll see you next week. Bye.